You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
We are back here on Right Side Radio. Here I am, Yaffe, filling in for Phil Williams. You can usually hear me on one of the stations that Phil broadcast from every day at 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. I do the Yaffe program 9 to 11 AM on WVNN Monday to Friday. And if you do want to find out more about that show, more about me in general, well, you can on Twitter at Yaffe. Now, spell the last name just so you know. Once again, Y-A-F-F-E-E. Facebook as well, like the Yaffe Facebook page. You can Google and subscribe to the Yaffe program podcast if you would like. And just like Phil today on his show, you know, like he is usually on his show, today on his show, I'm going to be solid, conservative, and just plain right, because that's how we do things around here. Boomer is here as well. Appreciate him producing today. We'll hear more from him later on. Boomer, I want to start with, and I'm going to have you play some audio here in a minute, is in the last segment we were talking a little bit with Jay Towne, former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne, about Attorney General Steve Marshall. Now, Boomer, I don't know what you think of Steve Marshall, but I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Phil Williams is a fan. I think he is, but I tend to be too much of a fan of Steve Marshall as our Attorney General. I don't know where you are, but
I'm with you. I mean, I'm a fan. I honestly don't know much about Steve. I don't know if you know this. I just moved down from Tennessee, just recently.
Oh, okay.
So I was up there in Nashville and moved down here actually about 6 months ago. Honestly, is when when Phil jumped and started syndicated the show. I moved down here and he asked me to jump in on him, and I've been blessed and been able to do the show with him since then.
That is awesome. So my brother lives in Nashville right now. So Nashville is a great city. Did you grow up in Nashville or?
No. What's funny is I actually grew up in Gazan. Phil was a family friend.
Okay.
And he heard that my family and I were moving back, and he just so happened to give me a shout because I was in the music industry for a while up in Nashville. So he's like, "Oh, okay. This may be up your alley, Nate." So.
Nice. That's awesome because. Yeah, it was. You're basically where I was 2 years ago when I moved here a couple of years ago from Florida. You know, I had to really brush up on Alabama politics.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm like deep into it, so I'm sure you're kind of where I was at that
point.
I'm
trying to dive in with Phil, so every time he's talking about something, I'm like, yes, and then I'm like, I need to do some more research.
Yeah, exactly. I understand. I get how you feel. I will say Alabama politics is fun. It is much more fun than politics in other states.
Oh, good.
Can't exactly explain why, but it's much more fun. But anyway, yeah, I tend to be someone who thinks, okay, if DeSantis runs in 2024 and wins or something, and he appoints Steve Marshall as its attorney general, I'd be a little torn. I mean, originally I would just be like a big fan of that because, you know, I'm a big fan of Steve Marshall, but then we would lose him as attorney general here, and then I would be kind of sad. About that.
So it'd be like a, it would be like, you know, catch 22. Yes, but oh, darn.
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, I just would like to see him in that position. But in another case, it's like, well, who do we replace him with here? We still need someone good here. But another reason why I say that is what we were talking about with Jay Towne, what he said on the death penalty, which I think was really good. So I sent you a bunch of cuts. Mm-hmm. I actually played them on my show this morning, but I'm going to go through it again because I think it's that important. I think it's worth repeating. Hopefully, I'll get them on my show and write about it at yellowhammernews.com pretty soon. We'll delve deeper into it. But yesterday, he held a press conference talking about the death penalty. This comes after Governor Kay Ivey kind of announced a pause in the death penalty, asked Attorney General to review the procedures. And he's going to review it, but he said, look, there is no moratorium according to his office. If she wants to commute a sentence or pardon a sentence, that's her prerogative. But according to him, justice delayed is justice denied. And I think he's right. So go ahead, real quick, Boomer. Go ahead and play cut one of Steve Marshall for me.
I have stood in many crime scenes, and I have seen the depravity of those who take the life of another. I've sat with victims' families, and through their tears, heard their stories of heartbreak and of sorrow. I have personally tried, convicted, and successfully advocated for someone to be on death row for the offense of capital murder. And I have likewise heard victim stories after that verdict about how the delay in the implementation of the death sentence impacts them for years to come. That's why I stand before you today to be very clear. Insofar as I and my office are concerned, there is no moratorium, nor will there be, on capital punishment in Alabama.
So, by the way, if you want to react to what he said as we go through these cuts, you can. You can call in 833-687-4448, 833-68-RIGHT, because, yeah, I mean, it's Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. So he talks there about why he's decided not to do this. Go ahead and play a cut two of Steve Marshall for me, Boomer.
What occurred on November 17th was a travesty, but not for the reasons that many death penalty opponents and death row sympathizers would have the public to believe. It was a travesty of justice not for Kenny Smith, the twice convicted murderer who was scheduled to be executed that day, but it was for Elizabeth Sennett and for the members of her family. 35 years. That's how long Elizabeth Sennett's family waited for justice to occur. 35 long years. To give some perspective, almost half of Alabama's population wasn't even born when this malicious crime was committed. The well-known axiom is true, that justice delayed is justice denied.
I mean, I know J-Town had read that in the last segment, and it's just something here for hearing it from him personally as well, because he's not wrong. He's exactly right. 35 years. I'm 36. So I was a year old when that crime happened. And still, the victim's family has not been able to see justice. And there's just something wrong with that. Isn't right? And really, one point we need to remember is that the activists, the media, the lawyers who are commenting on this, who are celebrating what KIV did, their goal isn't to change execution protocol. I had some trolls on Twitter try to kind of troll me on this issue. Their goal isn't to change execution protocol. Their goal is to get rid of the death penalty. That's what they want. And they're going to find any way they can. And they figure that if we make it so you can't even do a lethal injection in Alabama for the death penalty, then we're just not going to have the death penalty. That's what they're hoping will be the end result of all this stuff. But then you think about the victims of these kind of crimes. I think it should change your mind on the death penalty. Go ahead and play Steve Marshall, cut three for me.
Been a great deal of media coverage, both local and national, about what happened in Kenny Smith's execution chamber. Much of that coverage has seemingly been openly sympathetic to Smith and his cause, even with some going so far as to advocate for the abolishment of the death penalty. And on what basis exactly? Because a cold-blooded convicted killer complains about the prodding and poking of a small IV line. Really? Prodding and poking with a needle? Let's consider the awful irony of Smith's complaints. He is the monster convicted of the murder of a woman who was stabbed 10 times with a 6-inch survival knife. And then she was beaten and bludgeoned to the point that her face was unrecognizable to her family and to her friends. Elizabeth, a God-fearing woman and mother, suffered 8 stab wounds to her chest, 1 to each side of her neck, and her face was smashed with a fireplace poker. And yet some want to complain that the use of a small IV needle somehow or another violates the Constitution.
I mean, how do you argue with his logic there? That we're so focused on a needle, which, I mean, when I get my blood drawn, I have to get a needle, or I get an IV or something, I get a needle. Or we're so worried about a needle that we don't care about the victim. What about the victim who suffered way worse 35 years ago and the family still awaiting justice? And the death penalty, unless you disagree with me, and if you do, you can call in 833-687-4448, 833-68-RIGHT. Unless you disagree with me and think, no death penalty ever. I mean, the only argument I've ever heard against the death penalty that makes any sense to me is that it does take too long. And it, with all of it taking too long, it's just not even worth it. Might as well just put them in jail for the rest of their lives. But when you hear how heinous some of these crimes were and what happened to the victims, I mean, I agree. There are just some times where the death penalty is needed to get true justice. And it's not about revenge. It's about justice. We can talk more about this. We're going to take a break. I'm going to play more cuts of Steve Marshall when we get back. By the way, at the bottom of the hour, I do have a special guest, Jonathan Emord. He has a column in townhall.com talking about stuff dealing with the vaccine mandates, the COVID mandates that happened in Virginia, some ramifications of that. So we'll have our guests at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams, solid conservative and just plain right. As well, you can at 833-687-4448, 833-68-RIGHT. Welcome back to Right Side Radio, the show where you can expect things to be solid, conservative, and just plain right. This is Yaffe filling in, Alabama's voice of reason, filling in for Mr. Phil Williams. Let's go to the phones right now, talking about what Attorney General Steve Marshall said yesterday when it comes to the death penalty, reacting to Kay Ivey wanting to put a pause on executions after a full review. Let's go to Brian in Huntsville. Brian, what's your take on this today?
Well, my take on it is I believe he's precisely correct, and I'm not that worried about somebody, the perp not being able to find a vein in there. What I'm wondering is this. The biggest thing I have against the executions is who pushes the plunger, who fires a shot. What does that do there to their heart and their head when they have to do it? I'm more worried about them than I am the perp. Once it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt, I'm wondering what it does to them over the long run, like a lot of soldiers and everything that end up having to do.
It's a really good point. I never really thought about it from that angle, in terms of what it does to the executioner and how that would affect them. I guess you'd have to talk maybe to an executioner to
get that.
They
have to go
that,
home to their family that night and get it out.
Yeah, it's very,
a great day, sir. Thank you.
It's very interesting. Brian, thank you so much. I honestly hadn't even thought about it from that angle. Let's go to Sparky in Harvest. Sparky in Harvest is on the line, wants to comment. Sparky, what's your take today?
Hey, Yaffe and Boomer. I'm the weird guy at work who rescues bugs and crickets from the long hallway so they don't dehydrate and die. I let them outside. I'll stop traffic to rescue a turtle and get them off to the side of the road where they don't get crushed. And I'm very compassionate about innocent animals. I'm compassionate about innocent little babies in the womb. But I'm not compassionate toward death penalty inmates who are on death row for decades and have, you know, used the comfort and luxury of all those appeals. When it's time for them to die, it's time for them to face the music, face the outcomes of their consequences. And I find nothing wrong with the term revenge or vengeance. I think vengeance is all through the Bible. I'm okay with it. It is justice, but in the case of a capital murder, a vicious, brutal murder, or somebody who rapes children, man, sign me up. I'll flip the switch. I'll push the plunger. I'll get that needle in there. Don't worry.
All right. Well, Sparky, appreciate your call. Almost kind of a reaction to the last caller. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying about vengeance because, you know, in certain perps, you almost there's almost a human desire for vengeance. But when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to having a just society, it just can't be about vengeance. In order to have an ordered civil society, it has to be based more on justice. Once you start going down the road of vengeance, you start going into like a tribalist mindset that happened in some ancient societies, which I think were not good. Let's go to another call real quick. Shorty in Athens is weighing in. Shorty, what's your take on all this?
Hey, how you doing today, Appy?
Doing good, my friend.
So here's what I get. I just moved from Wisconsin to Alabama, and our laws about, you know, people gaining 500,000 pounds just so, you know, whatever. They had strict laws in Wisconsin that if any guard or any staff member seen an inmate get to a point to where they could barely walk, they would put them on a 1,500 calorie diet. Mandatory. And I think that's something that needs to be done here because I don't understand how Alabama would allow an inmate to get as big as he did to where they cannot find a vein.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle. I mean, I'm kind of totally with you on that. Appreciate your call, Shorty. Can't argue with that. I mean, if they're purposely making themselves bigger and bigger and you put a point you can't get a vein, I mean, they need to be on a diet. How do they get to that point?
I don't know how they allow that. I mean, because you're only allowed so much on your canteen to order per week. And it's like in Wisconsin, it was like $25 a week you can only spend on your canteen. And if you had more in your cell, because trust me, I spent 15 years in the penitentiary. I know how this goes. If you have so much more food in your cell, they wouldn't allow you to order in a canteen until all that canteen is gone.
Interesting. All right. So what do you think about the death penalty in general? I mean, do you think Attorney General Steve Marshall is right?
I'm 100% for it. I'm 100% for it. For murdering, you touch a child, I believe that you should die. And it shouldn't take 35 years to bring justice and closure for a family. That's not right. There should be a law put in place by the Republican Party and get it passed through that in 10 years, you're gone. 5 years, you're gone. Because there's no way that these families should suffer for this long and he's just playing the system. That's all. That's all he's doing. He's playing the system.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate your call. I don't disagree with him at all. It shouldn't take 35 years. I mean, that is the one thing, the one argument I hear from those who are against the death penalty that kind of makes sense. That, well, it takes so long. You have this whole process. What's the point? You're just wasting taxpayer dollars. Might as well just keep them in prison for life. But the real solution isn't to keep them in prison for life. The real solution is to speed up the death penalty process. I mean, that's really what it is. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to speak with Jonathan Emort. He's got a great column at townhall.com about a rogue Virginia ABC that sent police to enforce a COVID lockdown. Pretty crazy story. We'll get to that next. This is the Appy filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. Quick from townhall.com, and I think Phil Williams actually tweeted a story about this out earlier as well. There was a rogue Virginia Alcohol Bureau Control Board that sent police to enforce a COVID-19 lockdown in Virginia. Now, the person writing this column is Jonathan Emort. He's He's an author, a legal expert as well. Jonathan, really appreciate you coming on the show today to talk about this.
You bet.
So, yeah, give us the lowdown on this story. I mean, we have a new governor in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, Republican governor, but a lot of this started before he became governor, where basically there was one place, a restaurant, I believe, that was forced to have these lockdowns, but they didn't want to shut down.
Right. So in December of 2020, Ralph Northam, the former governor of Virginia, issued an executive order, number 72, that had all these arbitrary restrictions on it. For example, no one in Virginia was allowed to leave their house between midnight and 5 a.m. And also no restaurant was allowed to serve alcohol after 10 p.m. How this has anything to do with the transmission of COVID, I don't know, other than if you're telling people they have to stay in their house longer periods of time, you're obviously increasing, not decreasing, the transmission of COVID. But then they had all the other arbitrary restrictions, which is you can't wear a mask unless you're eating or sitting down to eat. If you stand up, you got to put your mask back on. If you're playing a musical instrument in the restaurant, you don't have to have a mask. That's good. It'd be kind of rough to get the instrument in your mouth. But the whole thing, you know, it's those kinds of things. And he refused to do it. And so the board went after him for it. And then the governor, Northam, prior governor, withdrew the executive order. Even though he withdrew it, they continued to go after him. And they prosecuted him, and they got a court order based on their prosecution, administrative hearing and decision. And then they sent the police and 25 agents, police and so forth, to his restaurant on Friday, and they raided his place. They took all of the alcoholic beverages there, which is the vast majority of the wealth of the enterprise, and they also imaged all his hard drives so that they can go after anybody else who happened to be there, I guess, at after 10 p.m. But the whole thing is just utterly ridiculous because it was a withdrawn order. The new governor is opposed to it, but this board, comprised all of Democrats, went after a prominent local Republican who's running for the state Senate, Matt Strickland, and they, you know, they're trying to run him out of business.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So this is still going on, right? I mean, there hasn't been any effort really to stop this from the governor or anyone else. I mean, is there a chance maybe the governor will step in here, or can he step in at all?
Well, we were hired late in the game, and we petitioned the governor to do this, to act.
Okay.
The governor can act. He can remove all of the board members for cause, any board member for cause. Here you've got proof of bias. You also have proof of enforcement of a withdrawn executive order. If a governor can't withdraw an executive order and expect the executive agencies to abide by his determination, then any time an executive order is issued, it's indefinite, right? Because the executive agencies can enforce it forever. So this is a question of respect for executive power, and the governor needs to rein in this rogue ABC. He ought to change the personnel, and he ought to give amnesty to all of those who have been prosecuted, not just Matt Strickland and Gore Meltz, but everybody who has been prosecuted under this executive order. It's against what Governor Youngkin is all about. He's for freedom of choice. He was against these forced mandates. It was a key provision of his campaign to be against these things. Now it's time to act, and I believe he will.
So how is the alcohol and the alcohol board, the control board, what is their justification for this? Is it that he went against the executive order while it was in place so it can still be kind of enforced? I mean, is there any kind of legal?
Yeah, but this is really nuts because, yes, that is their position that, hey, look, the executive order was in place and you defied it. Okay, we're going to shut your business down. Now, what about the fact that the governor withdrew it? What about the fact that the pandemic is largely over? What about the fact that no one actually came forward saying they contracted COVID in the restaurant or somehow were you're injured? There's no harm here. There's no evidence of anything other than a technical violation of a ridiculous, unconstitutional order. The order violates your freedom of travel. It violates your freedom of association and your liberty rights under the 14th Amendment. I mean, this thing is just rank. And not only that, it's wholly arbitrary and capricious. There's no connection between this and science. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So, you know, enforce a completely ridiculous order after it has been withdrawn. How about that? That's a good thing for the ABC board to do. Shows maturity, intelligence, and no bias.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think you're exactly right. A lot of these, I'm surprised that he's still in business, honestly, because I'm guessing it's been very, very difficult already for him to stay in business with all of this going on.
It is, and you know, this is a guy. He's a veteran of the Iraq War and of the Afghanistan conflict. He's fought terrorists. He was a combat army veteran. And he came back having fought for freedom over there for our country. And he said, look, I'm not going to put up with my own freedom that I fought for and put my life on the line for being taken away. I'm just not going to comply with this. And so he didn't. But the real question is, okay, what about the order? Is the order rational? No. Was it still in place? No. Where is the authority for this ABC board? I mean, they're absolutely out of their minds. Yes, they had the authority when it was in place, but now we're talking about enforcement over a year later. In May of 2021, Northam withdrew the order. And here we are in December of 2022, and they're still enforcing it.
Almost sounds like revenge. Like they're just going after him for revenge. I mean, am I wrong on interpreting it that way?
It reeks of bias because you don't have a problem here. It's not like there were health and safety problems, like this was a dirty restaurant or that people were actually injured. So there's no necessity for action. Then in addition, you have a withdrawn order. And in the, you know, they don't even give credence to the fact that it's withdrawn. I mean, that means there's no authority. The only authority they have to proceed is based on this order. The only action they took, the only basis for action that they have is this withdrawn executive order. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound completely insane. I mean, this might seem just a little bit off topic, but to me, this almost sounds like a reason to get rid of the Alcohol Control Board entirely. Well, why does it even exist? We have one of those in Alabama too, and I don't understand why it exists. I'm originally from Florida. We didn't have that. I mean, it just seems like another way for the government to do crazy stuff like this.
Well, it's anti-competitive, and it raises revenue for the state. But they go through, you know, they hold a sword of Damocles like this, the ability to take enforcement action and take your license away. And it becomes a very tempting sword for tyrants. So here you have a board comprised of tyrants, and you have an executive officer of the board who's a tyrant, and they took full advantage of the fact that here they are of one party, which is also a very bad thing, but they're all of one party, and they're all appointed by a far-left governor. And you have a conservative governor who comes into office, and the board's still in place, and the board starts acting against them. It's really seems to me to be an effort to embarrass the governor, the existing governor. And it seems to me to be a legacy piece of the former governor.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. So where do things stand currently? I mean, where is he in terms of, okay, he's still in business. What is the next step for you guys in defending him?
Well, at this point, you know, we came into the game late in the game here, and really our only option, we have to fully depend on Governor Glenn Youngkin, to act here. He can grant amnesty to everybody who is the subject of enforcement of the withdrawn executive orders. He can, you know, it's probable that if they've gone after Matt Strickland, they probably have gone after others who are quiet, who haven't their head above the parapet and are fearful to. So it's time to clean house over there. So he can remove the people's cause, and this is cause, And then, in addition, he can grant amnesty to those who were the subject of enforcement, give them back their licenses.
Has he said anything at all, the governor? Is there any kind of signal that he might do that, or we just don't know at this point?
Well, we think that he will act. We have reason to believe that he probably will act. We don't know what he's going to do, but we hope it's a full action that will take care of this. And, you know, the economic injury to Matt, probably to many others, is immense. A restaurant really can't stay in business unless it sells alcohol. So if you take away their right to sell alcohol indefinitely, you basically have foreclosed that restaurant to bankruptcy. And that's probably what will happen unless he acts, and he really ought to. That restaurant's extremely popular in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and to have it disappear is a big mark that people notice. They had an enormous crowd that came to the restaurant unable to drink alcohol and drink, you know, eating food there as a show of solidarity and support for Matt. But that's going to wane, and, you know, they have got to depend on alcohol in order to survive as a business. It really is. The margins are so tight for food, it's just impossible to make it.
Jonathan Emorty has got a piece on this at townhall.com talking about this, and he's representing Matt Strickland, who is fighting for his business, his restaurant, as the Alcohol Control Board in Virginia is going after this guy over an executive order on COVID that's already been rescinded. Hopefully Glenn Youngkin does step in and change things here. Jonathan, really appreciate you coming on the show today, and I know I'll talk to you again in the future.
Thanks so much. Take care.
So we're going to take a break here. If you want to react to that, you can. Any Right Side ruffians out there want to react to it, you can. On the phone line, 833-687-4448, 833-68-RIGHT. I had some comments on this as well. Stupid COVID mandates and stupid alcohol control board. Just the most useless part of government, I think. We'll be back in a moment on Right Side Radio. Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Phil Williams is off today, so this is Yaffe filling in. If you want to find out more about me, if you don't know already, many of you do because you listen to me 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday here on WVNN. But if you don't, you can find out more about me on Twitter at Yaffe, Y-A-F-F-E-E. Or just Google the Yaffe Program podcast. You'll be able to find and subscribe to the podcast anywhere podcasts are available. So in the last segment, we were talking with Jonathan Emord. He was talking about the case going on in Virginia where the Alcohol Control Board, the ABC board in Virginia, has been going after this guy who owns a restaurant, didn't follow COVID mandates exactly, but they're still punishing him, even though the executive order by the former governor was already rescinded, even though there's a new governor who doesn't buy into these mandates. The mandates no longer exist. No one was harmed by his restaurant. Doesn't matter. The Alcohol Control Board there in Virginia went still going after this guy. He can't sell alcohol in his restaurant, which could obviously hurt his business a great deal. And while my initial thought is just how crazy we went during COVID with a lot of these mandates. You know, having some places open, some not open. You can have something but not have alcohol. All of this crazy stuff. By the way, there's a new report out that shows the data reflects that having people stay in their homes all the time with their families was more damaging than we thought because that's where it was spreading. When you're in close contact with a group of people like your family for long periods of time, it's going to spread easier among that family than it would in a public setting. So that was one of the issues right there. But beyond that, my original thought was, this is just another reason why an alcohol control board should not exist. I'm sorry. When I first moved here, that was one thing I was pretty surprised at. Why? Boomer, I actually have no idea how old you are. How old are you?
I'm 38.
Okay. Yeah, so you're around my age. Mm-hmm. So have you ever been in one of these ABC stores in Alabama?
Yes, I have.
Thoughts? Because when I go in, I'm like, this is a giant waste of space. These places are terrible. Why? Why do they exist? Why?
Yeah, that's kind of my gathering from it.
I mean, I have nothing against alcohol. I'm just saying, like, if you want to go in a liquor store, why? Like, I just go in and I'm like, this is such a perfect example, walking in one of those, why the government is so terrible at running so many things.
Yes, I can see that very well, very much.
Because, you know, in Huntsville, anyways, they have private liquor stores as well, and they're always right. Like a million times better. Am I?
Oh, man, I would much rather go into the privately owned ones.
what is a good excuse? Have you heard a good excuse on why the alcohol control board even needs to exist in the first place? Like, why? That is always my question. Why does this even exist?
Right. I mean, honestly, after listening and honestly, just through the years, I'm like, I understand that. I'm like, why does this exist? Do we really even need it? Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand. So
yeah, I was confused because when I first moved to Alabama, they had ABC stores. Well, in Florida, they don't have this alcohol control board. So, and they had some called ABC stores, but they're like privately owned. And I came and I'm like, well, these ABC stores are terrible. Why is this so bad here? And I'm like, oh, I found it. Oh, they're run by the government. Oh, they're run by the state government. That's why.
Yeah.
And you know, usually the response I hear, and the main reason why it's going to be incredibly difficult, if you really are like me and believe that the ABC board here in Alabama, just like in other states, should be abolished, the main reason that I hear it's never going to be, of course, it's money. What about the money?
Money.
They get revenue and a bunch of revenue from these stores. So if that's the logic, I guess we should have government grocery stores too. You know? You know, could you imagine walking? Because, you know, we could get money from that, too. No, we can't get the money from a lottery. Of course not. But right. We could get money from, we will just have ABC. We'll sell groceries there. Can you imagine you go into Publix or Kroger, and then you walk into a government-run grocery store?
Ooh.
Would you want to buy any food there?
No, probably not. No. I wouldn't want to really go in there, probably.
At all. So, but I mean, you know, if the argument is, well, it makes money, well, the government could get a bunch of revenue that way. And of course, they'll undercut competition. And of course, they would have more control. See, when you put it that way, you understand just how ridiculous the existence of this is. And if we had true conservatives in the legislature, that should be something they should work on. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Why is it so difficult in a deep red state where we apparently have a conservative legislature to get rid of something as obvious as the alcohol control board? Why is this so difficult? Well, it's difficult because there are too many of them. They love that revenue. They love that money. It's why it's hard to cut spending in D.C. It's why it's hard to get rid of something like that. By the way, you also need to get rid of, what is it called now? There's a board that regulates hospitals or whatever, and I'm totally blanking. It's just annoying. All right, we'll be back in a moment. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams. One more hour to go on Right Side Radio.